I really wasn't sure how to do it. Like, how do you actually leave this culture that's been a part of your life your whole life? I just couldn't envision the practicalities of that.
For me, it was a real grieving process.
I almost view this like an act of a good Samaritan, helping people down a path that can be really painful and helping them figure out how to make it through.
I found this community, and I found a space that's normalized my experience.
There are a lot of people who've been down this path before you. There will be a lot of people coming after you, and it's okay.
There is a light at the other end.
We are not intending to talk anyone out of the church. This is for people who've already decided they've left. This is for the wardless.
You're listening to Wardless, a post-Mormon field guide, a podcast addressing the challenges and practicalities of navigating life after Mormonism, because leaving the church can be a little bit peculiar. Join us as we explore the path away from Mormonism and examine what it means to be wardless.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wardless Podcast. My name is Michaela, and I will be moderating today's discussion. I'm joined by three of our regular Wardless panelists, Donna.
Hi, everyone.
Kristen.
Hello.
And Oliver.
Hello, hello.
So happy to see you all today. Well, it's not live, but see your faces on Zoom. Hi.
It's the story of 2020. Yeah.
Yes. This is a true 2020 recording. All right. So we only have one housekeeping item today, but it's a big one. So we wanted to share with you, our beloved listeners, that this is going to be our very last formal episode. And by formal, I mean that we've actually thought about it ahead of time. We've talked about it, and we will edit it after, or I should say Donna will edit it after. So we are going to do one final episode after this one that will be totally off the cuff, unedited, wardless, unplugged, off the rails. It will be all the things. But this today is going to be our last formal one. So I'm actually feeling a little bit sad today. I don't know about the rest of you.
Yeah.
There's some emotions for sure.
Yes. Well, from the very beginning of Wardless, when we first created this, we all knew and agreed that this was definitely a passion project for each of us, but obviously one that we knew we couldn't sustain forever. So in the same way that its creation felt really timely when it happened for each one of us, it now feels equally like it's time for us to move on. In the last 2.5 years that we've been doing this podcast, we've talked about everything from garments to weed to relationships to sex. And there are so many episodes that we have talked about and have wanted to do. If we had endless wells of resources and time, I'm sure we would do those. But unfortunately, we don't. So in the last conversation that we had about the trajectory of this podcast, it was maybe a year ago. We talked about it and we agreed that our final formal episode really needed to be about what is possibly the most important how-to that we have left to discuss, and that is how to move on. So that is what our episode is about today, how to move on, as we are closing down this chapter in our lives in terms of wardless, and also how we are moving on from our Mormonism.
I think that was beautifully said, Michaela.
Yeah. Just give me a second to wipe away a tear. Possibly.
Really? Or are you being sarcastic?
Both. I can't be vulnerable and not sarcastic.
I can't. Got it. It's too much exposure to be vulnerable.
Yeah, gotta keep that layer of protection there, right? The sarcasm has to kind of cushion it a little.
Fair. I get it.
That self-awareness is important.
That is.
It's very important in life.
I absolutely respect that. Well, okay. So to kick off our discussion, I think what I want to do is establish kind of a baseline or a framework. And I want to talk about what does moving on mean to each of you? Because I imagine it doesn't mean exactly the same thing to every person, especially when we're talking about something as complicated as leaving a religion. So I'd like to hear from each of you, what does it mean to you to have moved on or to move on? So Donna, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, in thinking about this, I was reminded of a presentation I saw many years ago when I was deep in the process. I believe I actually shared it in one of our first episodes, and it's by a Quaker pastor who also left the Quaker faith, and it's about leaving religion. And he likens it to walking away from a mountain. And I just really love that metaphor to describe the process, because when you're on a mountain, it's like surrounds you, right? And it can take a long time and can be kind of arduous to walk down or climb down the mountain, and is a step-by-step process. And then even when you're like officially off the mountain, it still is the most dominant and prominent part of the landscape. And often you're very much still in the shadow of the mountain. But again, you just keep step-by-step walking away, and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller until, in his words, the peak disappears underneath the horizon. And his name, I haven't said it, by the way, it's James Mulholland. And I will link to it in the show notes. It's a really beautiful talk, a really beautiful presentation about just the process of leaving religion. He's, as a pastor, he's really a gifted orator. But I've been thinking about that visual, because that's what it very much feels like to me, that it's not really, we're not talking about a destination, I don't think, as much as just a process.
Okay, so let me see if I'm understanding this right. So as you move down off the mountain and move away from it, does that sort of represent the importance of the religion? Like as the mountain gets smaller in your rearview mirror, does the impact or importance of the religion get smaller? Is that the correlate there?
I mean, I think it depends on each person's situation. Experience. Yeah, and their experience. Because one thing I was thinking of as we were preparing for this was, you know, maybe the mountain gets smaller and smaller, but maybe it's that you get bigger and stronger as well.
Ooh, maybe, I love that.
You know, maybe it's not, because it will always stay a mountain, I think, for maybe a lot of people. It's there, but it's just maybe it's like you're in relation to you, how much it is overpowering or looming or impacting your life.
Got it.
I really, really resonate with that mountain metaphor, like just the idea that when you're on a mountain, you can't even see the mountain. Like it's the whole forest for the trees idea.
Yeah.
But as you get farther away and it gets smaller, it's still something in your horizon, but it's not everything. It's not all consuming around you.
Right.
And so just the idea of the mountain, having driven up and down the West Coast a number of times in my life, you know, or driven from Utah to Seattle a couple of times, you know, just seeing how mountains recede, that really, I really connected with that. Mm-hmm. I really connect with that idea of it's smaller and smaller, and there are other things to look at besides it. And I felt for me, as I've been coming down off the mountain, there are periods where all I see is the mountain. Mm-hmm. And slowly over time, I'm seeing other things.
Right.
Other than the mountain.
Yes. But then like you take a turn maybe in the path and you see a new vista opens up that you hadn't seen before. And it's a totally different landscape, a different view. I love that.
Yeah.
And it opens up a whole new place to explore. And that's what he talks about. He goes on then to talk about once you're off the mountain, then you become an explorer of a new landscape.
I love that. Like we all get this new opportunity to explore what we want our lives to be and what we think spirituality is, like we talked about in the last couple episodes. So Thank you for that, Dawn. I love that. All right, Kristen, what does it mean to you to move on?
I actually think that Donna's metaphor of the mountain fits actually rather well with what I feel like I've experienced. Because for so long, Mormonism was like at the center of my life, right? It wasn't just my religious belief. It wasn't just a place I went, you know, a church building I went to go worship in on a Sunday. It was central to the way I lived my life. It informed all the decisions I made, you know, whether they were big or small decisions. It influenced and ultimately often changed the kinds of relationships that I had with people and family and loved ones. And now I look, you know, several years after kind of having started moving away from that mountain, and I find myself in a place where Mormonism is no longer a central part of my day at all. And it really is no longer even on the periphery of my daily life. I acknowledge, though, that it's still there. To use that mountain metaphor, the mountain doesn't go away. It is still there. And it has dramatically influenced the person that I have become and the life that I lead now. But I can also go days and days and days without thinking anything at all about Mormonism, unless a Mormon friend or family member brings it up.
Which, or you see hashtag give thanks.
I was just about to say, hashtag give thanks. You know, and so I think for me, that's really what it's been. It's that realization that what used to be such a central core structural foundation of my being, really, has, I have kind of extricated that from myself, set it aside, and been able to take those steps further and further and further away from it to a point where I no longer see it anymore. And it has no, Mormonism now has no bearing on the daily rhythm of my life. You know, there's no family, well, if there really ever was much, because we were pretty not great Mormon parents, but you know, there's no family scripture study and family prayer and all of those kinds of rhythms that would come along with like a traditional ideal Mormon family's just way of going about their day. None of those things exist for me anymore. And I'm at the point where I don't even miss or think about those things anymore.
Yeah. I also think of this in the way that, like when I was in the process of leaving the church, we had also moved out of the country and were living in another culture, a different culture to us. And at first, you know, I was so very aware of things happening back in the US. I was also just very aware of how different I was, even just going to the grocery store or just situations you'd find yourself in, you didn't know if you were doing it right. And was just constantly reminded of my Americanness.
Right.
But as you got more and more familiar, more and more used to things, as more time went on, I was aware of that less and less. And it would still come up every so often. Like still there'd be little moments of friction or awkwardness or something. Things would happen. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm definitely a foreigner here. But it would happen less and less over time. So that's another metaphor we can torture the expatriate.
There you go. Well, metaphor. I think you're really hit on something there, though, because I think about that and think about the past 2 years of this podcast, right? And all the things we've talked about. And I think for most of us, the first time we tried alcohol, the first time we tried coffee, the first time we did any of these things, it felt so foreign. Like you're stepping into this world that you just can't understand. You have no frame of reference at all for this. But now here we are. And it's different for each of us, the number of years that have elapsed since those beginnings for each of us. But you start to feel more and more and more, maybe not like a true native, but you get closer to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You just become more settled in your own skin in this world after Mormonism.
You feel less foreign.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you know what I keep thinking about as you're talking is the grocery store? And I know this sounds silly, but to me, the grocery store is sort of like this perfect representation of how I feel about my transition out of Mormondom. that the first time I went to the grocery store, maybe in a tank top, and it felt like this really huge deal. Mm. Or maybe I went to the grocery store and had a bottle of alcohol in my cart and walked around and felt just ridiculously self-conscious for that 25 minutes that I was in the store, like, who's going to see me? Oh my gosh. And I was on high alert the whole time, or coffee or whatever it was. But somehow going to the grocery store has been sort of my litmus test. How am I feeling at the store today? And so I actually thought about this the other day. I was at the store and was perusing the booze and thought nothing of it. And I actually thought in that moment, like, oh my gosh, wow, okay. There's some progress. There's some forward momentum that has happened here. And I am not in the same place that I was, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago.
There's some moving on.
Yes, if you will. There is some moving on.
Michaela's epiphanies in aisle 9.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's so interesting because I was thinking about, okay, what are some experiences I've had where I felt foreign? And the thing about a grocery store is it happens every week.
Right.
You know, the first time I went to a family gathering not wearing garments, that was a big novel moment for me where I felt foreign, but I don't go to a lot of family gatherings because I don't live near my family. Whereas the grocery store is something that most of us do every week. It makes a lot of sense that's been a good sort of, like you said, litmus test or just barometer of your process.
Yes. Okay, Oliver, your turn.
Yeah. I've loved what Kristen and Donna have shared about moving on. I want to take it a different, slightly different direction. To me, moving on is very much about grief. And every time I think about grief in my life, I think about Amy's opening line to the podcast in the bumper where she talks about it's a grieving process. As I think about how I define grief, it's the five stages, yes, and you bounce between the stages. And the stage you're in, you're never in one stage at any time, but the stage you're spending the most of your time in is sort of your home stage. And, you know, the goal with anything that I've grieved in my life has been to get to where I'm spending the majority of my time in acceptance. And I found it's about grieving and letting go of something that I loved, something that was a huge part of me, and something that I didn't want to leave, but I felt like it was time for me to leave. And so letting go of all of that, you know, has been the big piece of moving on for me. It means to grieve and let go of all those little ties to Mormonism. And I'm consciously, Marie Kondo-esque, but I'm consciously saying goodbye to those things and realizing that I'll miss them, and I'm sad, and I'm happy, and I've denied it for a little while, but I'm, you know, I've been angry, but then I'm getting to a point where I've just accepted them as they are, and I can let them go.
I agree, Oliver, that as we've been talking about this, we can think of it a lot in terms of like milestones and things that we physically do or maybe don't do or introduce or let or stop doing. But also there is a huge emotional component to it that goes right along with those things. And sometimes also has nothing to do with the actual physical things we're doing. And grief, I think, is for sure what has been a big part of it for me.
Yeah.
And I think that going back to the mountain metaphor, I mean, I've said this many times on the podcast that I knew I didn't believe in the church. I knew I didn't even believe in God. And then I just still kept going to church. And just, I think for a lot of that time, I was like clinging to the mountain. I couldn't quite let it go. And I really love the dual idea of like, it's taking one step at a time, but it's also letting go.
Yeah.
Any emotional development that you're going to have, for the development to actually take place, action is required. You cannot just sit idly and allow time to pass. That's just stagnation. So to actually have anything change, there's some actual work that has to be done.
That I love that idea that moving on isn't just about time. It's about putting in the work. You actually have to take the steps and put in the effort and do the work.
Right.
To move on.
Exactly. Just sitting on the mountain is just sitting on the mountain. Yes. Yeah.
And I actually think that the emotional work may actually be the most difficult and the most important that we do in all this. You know, it's one thing just to stop going to church. There are plenty of people who do that, but then who never do what comes next in terms of dealing with the emotion behind it, how they're feeling about this. Are they grieving it? In what way are they grieving it? I think about myself and just think about how many tears I shed, you know, over those first couple of years trying to grapple with this decision, this huge life-altering decision that I had to make. And it really was a struggle. It was work. But in the end, and this is going to be individual to everybody because we all are going to have a different trajectory through this process, right? And so for one person, this may not matter as much. Maybe this emotional component isn't as intense for them. And that's okay. I don't want to like delegitimize anybody's experience there. I know that speaking for myself though, that was a massive part of what I had to do to start to come to terms with physically leaving the church as well. I mean, Oliver can attest to it, just how many months and years it took me to really come to a place where I could feel at peace, to feel that acceptance with where I was sitting in terms of my emotional connection to the church.
One thing that I think is interesting, just the differences between your story and my story, Kristen, is that you had a moment where you stopped going to church, and it was well before you knew what you were going to really do about the church question.
In the end, right, yeah.
Yeah. And whereas I deconstructed all my beliefs and kept going, and then finally, you know, finally stopped going when I knew like I was done with the church by the time I actually stopped going. But at that point, I still had many years of still working out a lot of emotional issues.
Oh, for sure.
there's a lot of things that have to happen at different times, and everyone's story is going to be different.
Right.
Yes.
Like even we talked about in the, what was it, the first episode where we like charted out the path, you know, this is kind of us looking back now and dissecting that path.
But also recognizing that the path forward is just as varied as the path behind and the path forward. They're all so varied.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting too, even just amongst the podcast group that we have, how 2.5 years have gone by since those first conversations. And how much different, our perspectives though are even now from what they were then, and how much, you know, in a lot of ways, how much more growth each of us has experienced. Even like for Donna, I think even for you and I, who were probably the ones who were the farthest along when we first started this, I feel like I know for myself, I don't want to speak for you, but I know for myself that this past 2.5 years have really been crucial. I think, you know, for me in getting to the place where I am right now, when it comes to the church.
I totally agree. I totally agree for myself as well. I thought I had so much behind me when we started this podcast. Little did I know, like probably the biggest things that I needed to deal with were still ahead of me.
So I actually went and listened to the first two episodes that we had in preparation for this discussion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really fun. And you know, it's interesting.
Were we like babes in the wilderness?
Well, I could see a difference. I am curious to know if our listeners could see any difference. But like knowing all of you so well and knowing myself obviously so well and where I was at the time, I definitely feel like, yes, I was a babe in the wilderness and I was at the very beginning of this whole, I'm not going to say the J word, process.
Experience.
Thank you. Experience. But at the time, I think I really thought I was a lot farther along than I was. That was definitely one of my takeaways from re-listening to that. It was interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to jump back to what we were talking about a second ago, which was differences, that everybody has kind of a different trajectory now when they're coming off of the mountain. And one thing I want to cover is what your obstacles have been, because everybody has different challenges, different obstacles, or if we want to carry on the metaphor, boulders, if you will, to overcome in actually being okay with walking away. So I have a two-part question for you. So first, I want to know what was the biggest boulder, one or two, that you had to overcome? And then I also want to know, how did you actually process that? So we just talked about, you know, doing some actual emotional work. So I want to know, what did you do? What was the emotional work that you took on? So Kristen, let's start with you.
Okay, so I'm going to do with Donna and say three things.
Yay!
But I'll be quick. So as I really thought about this and was kind of thinking back, you know, it's been what, 8 or 9 years now when this all first started for me. I think that over the course of those first few years, the biggest things I felt like I had to overcome were, one, at the time, we were a mixed faith marriage, right? I mean, we weren't exactly a really traditional mixed faith marriage because we weren't, you know.
Like we've talked about before, we didn't have a stereotypical traditional
like
Mormon
Orthodox
marriage.
Yeah. Mormonism, right? But we still, Oliver was, he was still an active member of the church, and he would take our kids to church on Sundays. And so that was one of the first things that we really had to grapple with. The other thing I think was a lot of fear. That fear of, am I doing the right thing? Am I making the right choice by taking these steps away? And the third one was honestly a lot of shame. A lot of shame around, how in the world could I have believed this? And those were really the first three things that like came to mind as I thought about this. And so that second question of how I processed it all or how I dealt with it, I think for us, when it came to this notion of being in a mixed faith marriage, it was so much about learning how to be vulnerable, having lots of very open conversation, how to be respectful and patient with each other. And I think both of us had to do that. And being able to like practice compromise a lot more. I think that working through that process helped us build a lot of tools in our relationship that we've been able to use throughout the time since then.
I feel the same.
But I think that it was so much about being willing to open myself up, to have really vulnerable conversations about things that were very raw and very painful to me at the time. And that was a lot of work. That took a lot from me. I'm not the most expressive person in the world. Surprise, surprise. And so for me, being able to actually practice that kind of vulnerability, it took a lot of work. I think the second thing, kind of that trying to come to terms with that question of, am I doing the right thing? Now, you guys all tease me all the time about, you know, knowing everything. I don't know everything. I'm going to throw that out there.
She but does.
They all tease me.
Do you know what? Kristen doesn't know everything. She doesn't know that she does know everything. So that's the one thing she doesn't know.
The reality is that I'm genuinely really curious about things. So if I'm reading something or listening to something and I hear a phrase or I hear an idea or something that I'm not super familiar with, I learn about it. I try to like get as much information as I can because that knowledge, it helps me feel secure. I realized that about myself. Knowledge and information helps me feel secure. It helps me feel grounded. And so through this process, my initial reasons for wanting to step away from the church really weren't about historical or doctrinal things. And yet I found myself sitting in this place where I needed to know. I needed to know more about those things, not to convince myself I was making the right choice, but to feel more confident, to feel confident that I had the information I needed to be able to say, yes, the things that I'm learning about the church are in opposition to my own personal set of beliefs and ethics and morals. And so doing that work of educating myself was really, really crucial in terms of working through that fear of not knowing whether I was making the right choice for myself or not. And then third, just the shame. I mean, you all know that I am a convert to the church. And there have been so many times when I've encountered people, both in and out of the church, more out of the church than not than in, but who, when they find out that I am a convert who has now left, their first question was, how could you even have believed that in the first place? You know, to them, it seems so far-fetched.
Like, it's understandable if you were born into it, but exactly. if you consciously chose to join right. it.
Yeah, if you're raised in this, and you know, that's different than making that conscious choice as an adult. I mean, if you can call 18 an adult, which...
That's debatable.
Yeah, that's questionable. And there have been times when I have grappled with that question myself of, how did I let myself believe this in the first place? And that's a trickier one. I feel like, because, I mean, I think for all of us, we could probably say that those feelings of shame, that's one of the most difficult things, I think, for any of us to overcome, right?
Oh, they're real.
In wherever those feelings of shame are coming from, those are really hard to tackle. And that's where time actually has been, I think, the most important, because it's given me space to like understand more about what shame is and how those feelings come to exist within us. What triggers them? How can you overcome them? I will always and forevermore preach the gospel of Brené Brown. But in terms of learning about shame and vulnerability, that's been some work I've had to do to try and overcome these feelings of and recognize that I just need to look back at that 18-year-old girl and give her a lot of grace and a lot of forgiveness and a lot of understanding for where she was 20 plus years ago.
And that's real work, though. I have to say, that's not just time. That's real work to learn to give yourself grace. It's easier to do that for others, but to give it to yourself, even your former self, that's hard.
For sure. And especially because all those experiences that you have when you're 14 and 16 and 18 and beyond, those things are still a part of who you are now. And so it's hard work to try and look inside yourself and say, yes, I forgive that person for doing these things that have caused me in my incarnation currently to feel these feelings. But I think that working through that process, and I'm not totally there yet, because I still don't talk to my family, my family of origin, who is not LDS, I still don't talk to them about my experience leaving the church, mainly because I, even sitting here still, have this fear of hearing them say, I told you so. And so this is still something that I have to work on, you know, trying to like be totally comfortable and accepting of kind of where I am and how those decisions that I've made have impacted the person I am. I'm not 100% there yet, for sure.
Thank you for sharing that, Kristen. I really appreciate that. Oliver, do you feel up to going next?
Happy to. So the question, what has been hard for me with moving on? This is really an interesting question for me to tackle because I am not that far in moving on. You know, like I'm moving on now.
Right. You're in a different space than the rest of us are, for sure.
Yeah. I know this wasn't part of the question, but I want to mention one thing that I think is important about my moving on experience. And it's, I'm a trailing spouse. Donna and I are both trailing spouses. Whereas you, Michaela, and you, Kristen, are the first mover spouse. And it was so easy for me to stop talking about the church. Like, it was so easy because no one was going to church anymore. And so there's nothing really to talk about. In fact, there are times where Kristen will bring up church-related things. And I know sometimes I'm like, I just don't even want to talk about Mormons right now. And I keep that to myself and I let her express her, you know, what her comment is. But there are definitely times I know she's noticed I don't engage as much. And so my moving on experience has been shaped by being a trailing spouse, because I am not trying to walk off the mountain while half of my family is still sitting on the mountain. I'm the last one in our party walking off the mountain. And so I'm choosing when to let go a lot of things. And that's really shaped the things that I'm going to say are the hard things for me.
Can I just say that I really appreciate you pointing that out? Because as much as I think it's hard for anyone, this whole experience is difficult for anyone. But I do think that there is something about being the pioneer, if you will. Really, though, being kind of the trailblazer in your family that is, I'm just going to say it, I think it's more difficult. Now, not that you don't have different difficulties than the trailblazer has, for sure. But I do appreciate noting that that's a different scenario to be in.
I think also it's also worth noting that if somebody is still living in a, you know, high Mormon population area, if all of their family is still attending and believing, and maybe they live by their extended family very close to them, and they're all believing, I mean, those are your moving on state is going to look very different probably in those situations, because you are just confronted with church stuff on a much more regular basis than, for example, myself living in the Pacific Northwest.
In the mission field.
And not having my, you know, extended believing family in our stake, mm-hmm. or things like that. All of my spouse and my kids are out of the church as well. Like, it means that I do have the luxury of just not having to be reminded every single day of church stuff necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas when I left, I was living with my parents who were extremely active, and that was a totally different experience.
And I think you bring up something that I think is critical too, because this is another place where I have a slightly different perspective. Like I mentioned, my family of origin, not LDS. So I don't have the same kind of familial connection that the three of you do to Mormonism, mm-hmm. right? And so I am not getting that consistent sort of influx of Mormon messaging coming from family members that those of you who have been born and raised in the church necessarily would.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you still have family issues, though, related to
leaving. For sure. But the kind of the Mormon messaging that I'm getting is coming from Oliver's family. And I had that text thread muted. So
you do? That's shocking to me, Kristen.
So
pro tip, everyone.
I think the important takeaway here is that I win the difficulty contest. Can we all agree on that?
Oh, dear hell. You
win the grievance contest.
I do. Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry. I took that
That's okay.
off the rails.
So getting back, my apologies for not answering the question exactly, Michaela. But so to get back to that question that you posed of, you know, what were those big boulders? What were those hard things for me? They're really two big boulders. And I might throw in a third just in honor of Donna. But the first big boulder for me was really identity. My entire life, I have enjoyed being someone who's different. I'm one of five children. The other four all have red hair and blue eyes. I have brown hair and green eyes. I happen to look like my mom, whereas everyone else looks more like my dad and both my grandfathers. And so my whole life, I've always enjoyed being different. And when I meet people, I always wanted to be the one to tell them I was Mormon. I wanted to own that conversation. And so losing something that was one of the big defining aspects of who I was and was something very external that I used to define myself was really hard. Like, I think for me, therapy was probably the single most important thing. Because in speaking with my therapist, I realized that I used external things to define myself rather than using things that are important to me. Rather than saying, no, I can decide what makes me valuable. And it was part of a bigger move in my life of moving from very much external sources of validation to internal sources of validation, something that I'm in the process of. But that was really, really critical for me to do. And therapy has been a really critical part of that to help me deal with the identity boulder. The second boulder for me was community. Of Kristen and I am the more extroverted one in the relationship. Also to say that is, like, I'm the most extroverted person that I generally know.
Yeah, that any of us know. Mm-hmm.
That the world has ever known.
And I'm not the most introverted person, but I'm close to it. So
close. And so for me, community at church was huge. And losing that community was actually the final thread that I had to let go of. I was like Donna, I was still attending as I was deconstructing, and I knew I was done before I stopped attending. And finding community has actually been one of the hardest things, and I am still in the throes of it. I think moving and quarantine and pandemic has been just a huge wrench in that. Like how to make friends. I'm like in my 40s. I live in a new area. Like, how do I find people to hang with? And for me, the podcast has been a huge component of community. I've also really turned to my communities around games. I play Pokemon Go and I play Animal Crossing. I'm super nerdy, if in case you didn't figure out in the previous 39 episodes of this podcast. And so like those have been an important place for community for me, but I'm still struggling with that. And I still haven't found a community. I still am looking very, very much. I'm still very much looking for that and haven't figured that out. I think the one other thing that's really hard, and I think it's just because I'm in this process, is it's really hard to know what it means to move on, like to know what's next. I love The Good Place, the TV show, and the way they talked about moving on. You know, in The Good Place, there came a point where you just moved on and you didn't know what it was. I think of Dumbledore's conversation in King's Cross with Harry about just going on. You know, I really don't know what it means to move on from Mormonism because I really haven't done it yet. I haven't found my new home. And it's funny, like, I think I found spiritually some peace in the unknown, that what happens after this life is unknowable. I'm a very firm agnostic. And for me, it has been important to learn how to deal with that unknown and to sit with that unknown and be comfortable with that unknown. And I feel like I've gotten to that place a little bit. It's a little harder with my moving on because I still have more life to live, you know, and I'm still going to have a life outside of Mormonism. And so it's, yeah, that's been tough. And maybe I'll never fully know what it is to move on, but it's something that still has been a boulder and something to struggle with. You know, what is the beyond? What is the beyond Mormonism for me in my life, for Oliver? I don't know what that is. And that's something I still wrestle with.
I think that's a really excellent point. I love the idea of thinking about it in terms of the beyond and that we just don't know. And I think your point is good also that, okay, the existential questions are relevant and important to our lives, but they're only as important as we give them weight. But the day-to-day, how am I going to move on from this is important every day. It's something you have to mm-hmm. wrestle with every day. So I can mm-hmm. absolutely see how that was much more difficult for you. So thank you for that. Okay, Donna, it's your turn.
So I have 10.
Of course you do.
Just kidding. I only have 2, so all of you.
Smart Alec.
Oh, Donna with the F-bomb.
So along the lines of exactly what Oliver was just talking about figuring out what is next and being able to take that leap of faith, if you will, that was probably the hardest thing. I think, you know, stopping church attendance was obviously probably the biggest boulder that I first came across. And it took so long. It took so much longer than it should have. And I think that I had reached a point where I knew I was getting off the mountain, but I was, you know, hanging to the ledge for a long time because I was so afraid there was many things I was afraid of. And I was afraid of losing that community that Oliver talked about, just what in the world that was going to mean. There's so much fear around that. And then there was just this fear of what is my life going to look like, be like, feel like outside of the church, and not feeling like I could take those steps until I'd figure that out, I think. And at some point, finally just looking down and realizing the ground's there a foot away. You know, I'm thinking in my mind that it's going to be this colossal fall and traumatic, catastrophic tumble. And I just needed to take the step, but I was clinging to it for so long out of that fear. But another big part of that was also my people-pleasing tendency. And I think the work I had to do was really facing that need to make everybody around me happy and finally like suffocating, like, you know, putting the pillow over its face, and, like, pushing down hard, you know.
That's a little dark.
I love that so much.
Because that was, I mean, when it came down to it, I was ready to stop going to church for a long time before I finally stopped, because just this is going to make people who I love sad. And also this is going to even disappoint people who I don't necessarily love, who are just people at church, and they're just going to be so disappointed. And it was crippling. And when I finally did take that step, that was such a huge moment. I mean, I was so freeing. It was such a monumental step for me. But there was still a lot of work to be done. And the second big thing was, and I've talked about this in the regrets episode, was just figuring out how to deal with the regret surrounding my marriage. And I think for a long time, I just thought, if I just ignore it, you know, I've left the church, I've done the work, I've stopped attending, I've tried alcohol, I've taken off my garments, I've done all these steps, I've done the physical things, but I can ignore this gaping wound. And that if I just pretended it wasn't there, it would be still be fine. But we weren't. We were not fine. It was not okay. And so I talked a lot about that in that episode, of having to just reexamine the stories I was telling myself and seeing if we could create a new story together. But that was probably the toughest thing so far, is really delving in to that wound and opening that up. And that was tough emotional work for sure. That didn't just involve me, but also involved my husband. And that's also tough when you have these relationships as well, that it maybe isn't just you, but you also have to bring in other people and work things out.
Well, and especially having to face that after having already done something extremely hard and scary and terrifying, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then to move right into the next big, terrifying, scary thing.
I know. I think I was like, wait, I already did that. I conquered fear. I'm done. I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, I've had enough. I reached my cap. Yeah. I can understand that.
I would also say, just as far as some of this, maybe some more emotional work, a big thing that was important for me was just trying to make sure, and this is still a thing for me, is just like the Mormon thought processes and narratives that you have, like you can leave the church, but you can take those with you and they can still inform a lot of things that you think and do and
absolutely
ways you experience the world.
I think that's a super common thing, actually, that people will leave the church, but never take the time to sort of examine their own thought processes, the way that they approach their life. Mm-hmm. When it comes to like the way that the church teaches us about sexuality, that was the first one that came to my mind. So we've covered that before on, you know, we've had episodes about all of that, right? But that's an area where I think it's very easy for someone to leave the church and yet bring all of that baggage with them. And so you can fall into some really damaging behaviors and patterns if you haven't taken the work yet to really try and understand what's at the root.
Yeah, for sure.
So as I'm listening to the three of you talk, I'm hearing something in common. And I think what it is, it feels like what it comes down to is that each of you, and me included, have had to learn to stop our thinking and observe our thinking, observe the thought patterns that are happening in our heads. So observe the messages that are popping up about sexuality or your value as a person. And as you know, I'm a school counselor, and this is something that I teach my students all the time, is just to be aware of your thoughts. And it sounds like a silly thing, but it actually is it's very difficult to do, to slow yourself down enough, especially I think as an adult, to slow yourself down enough to stop and really examine those and say, okay, what is the message that I'm telling myself here? And is that a legitimate message? Is there truth to it? Is there value in that? How is that affecting me emotionally? I think that really requires a lot of work.
Absolutely. So for me, one of the things that's been the most helpful, actually, as I have tried to be more aware about how I think, is meditation. And in therapy, my therapist has been pushing meditation for years. One of my doctors had been pushing it. And I always thought, like, well, what is meditation about? And for me, meditation has really been about recognizing my mind wanders. And that's not bad. I can be aware of it. And building that muscle has been so valuable for me when it comes to the things that we're talking about, like, oh, I'm responding to something in my life because of something from Mormonism. Let me stop, look at it, and say, okay, is this something I want to carry with me? Or is this something that I want to leave on the trail as I'm coming out off the mountain?
Exactly. And that is the first step, is that you have to just recognize it. And
yes, it's hard.
That it sounds silly,
so hard.
But it's hard. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, because all of these thought processes they're so deep. They're way in there. And for a lot of us, they've been in there since, you know, birth. And so learning how to just recognize them, identify them, and then decide what to do with them. That in itself, I think, is a really challenging, difficult process.
Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that I've built that skill.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for that. Like, that's one of the and things. Like, this is a horrible experience, and there's some great skills I've built for my life, for my well-being and happiness.
Absolutely. Even just, like, you know, getting in arguments with my husband. It's not that I'm great at that, but...
But you are pretty good at it. I mean, that's what you're really saying,
I'm gifted. I am a gifted arguer. I have been told this my whole life, yes. No, but just in the midst of an argument, being able to take a beat, you know, and slow down and really, you know, come back to some meta-thinking. Okay, what am I thinking? What are the assumptions that I'm making? Like, what am I telling myself about this person and about what their intentions are and about what they mean, et cetera? And I think that's a hugely important skill just in terms of developing positive relationships and basic emotional health.
You know, and for those of you, I have heard so much about cognitive behavioral therapy in my life that it's CBT has sort of become like this shorthand. People use it without really saying what it is. But I have found that how I'm using cognitive behavioral therapy, I mean, one common way to share something from my personal life is I have a huge fear of rejection. That's just part of who I am. And I won't even ask Kristen for things because I fear her rejecting me, even as simple as like rubbing my shoulders. And one of the things that I have with CBT been doing is every time I catch myself saying that, I tell myself, Kristen is an adult. Kristen can be asked if she wants to do something. And we have the type of relationship, and Kristen has the strength of personality to say, no, I don't want that. And I have the maturity to, once I get past my fear of rejection, to say, she's not rejecting my love. She just doesn't want to do that, you know? And so those principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, again, it's buzzwordy, it's annoying, but there really are great tools there to help you in that process that you talked about, Michaela, of recognizing your thinking and really helping to be aware of some of those things you've brought along that aren't necessarily true, or that there may be a way that'll get you a better outcome or a healthier outcome.
And Amy will appreciate this. I just have to give a quick shout out to weed.
Say more about that, in all sincerity.
Honestly, I appreciate what you said about meditation, and I've decided that taking weed is sort of like an enforced meditation. That it feels like what it does is it peels back all of my defensive layers that I've built up over the years and through trauma and through various experiences that really protect my my soft inner shell, my inner point. Mm-hmm. But it does. It feels like it allows me to kind of reveal how I really feel at the root of things, where my emotions really are. And honestly, it has, especially, I will say, it has saved my life in quarantine. It really has. So thank you, weed. That's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, so the big question that I'm going to ask is, do you feel like you have moved on? And if you do, how do you know that? Oliver, do you want to start us off?
This is a hard question for me. And when I first thought about it, just to cut to the answer, I have not moved on. I think my best guess is I'm 75% the way through the process.
Do you have a spreadsheet that shows that anywhere? Sorry.
It's actually a series of spreadsheets. Just kidding. And the reason why I say 75%, or the reason why that I don't think I've fully moved on, is I haven't fully let go of a lot of things. And really the way I know for me, I haven't fully let of everything go, is I'm at the point where if I hear about things from Mormonism, I'm just sort of like, I don't want to hear about that. And I still flick into the anger phase, right? Like some of the stuff gets me mad or I get annoyed. I'm not yet to the point where it's just water off a duck's back. I'm not yet to that point where I hear something that's just blah, 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 just goes away. There's still something in me that if I don't consciously not pay attention, I know I'll react to. When I turn around and I see the mountain, I still have a bit of that trauma response. I haven't fully done all the emotional work through it to be that point where I can look at the mountain and say, that mountain is what it was and is what it is. And I've moved beyond it.
So maybe when General Conference comes around, you have to consciously tell yourself to not pay attention to it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't remember that it was General Conference, but as I saw stuff, I knew I couldn't even let myself read it. I didn't want to read the memes. Like I didn't let myself, because I know that I'm just not at that point yet. I'm still going back and forth between acceptance and anger.
Thank you. Okay, Donna, how about you?
So, to introduce yet another metaphor, if only this were a drinking game,
we'd
all be drunk.
This episode has been brought to you by the Tortured Metaphors.
Boom, we've got our sponsor. I kind of think of like the ghosts of Mormon past, present, and future, you know, that and how much
I'm here for this.
So I think that by the time I finally stopped going to church, I had given so much time and energy to the church for so many years when I didn't want to, that by the time I stopped attending, I had no more energy to give to the ghost of church present and future. So very quickly, those things were not in my orbit, I guess you could say. You know, conference came around, I didn't pay attention. It wasn't even that I didn't had to tell myself don't pay attention. It was just like, I have no more energy to give to that. So I think that was a phase for me that I never really dealt with. But the ghost of church past, of my own personal past with the church, was still very much haunting me. And like I said, still had a lot to deal with there. And that, I feel like that's going to be, it's not like a constant companion. Again, let's bring in all of our church jargon here. But I don't know if I'm ever going to reach that point. Like Oliver said, he's 75%. I don't know if I'm ever going to reach that point where I feel like I'm 100% moved on. There was a point where when we moved back to the United States, and I had felt like at that point, like I have come through to the other side. I have gone through the process, deconstructed, reconstructed, left the church. I am on the other side. And then I ended up going to a retreat here for ex-Mormons. And I debated, because I was like, I'm kind of over it, but I also didn't have any, I needed to create a new community here. So I thought that might be a good way to meet people. And I ended up ugly crying in front of a whole bunch of strangers at that retreat over Mormon stuff. And so obviously still had quite a bit under the surface to deal with there. Even at a point where I really firmly thought, pretty much done with all that, kind of over it. So I think it's just going to be a lifelong process. I feel like the mountain is very much far behind me, but I am definitely still aware that it's there. It will always be there. But I do feel much more prepared, and I feel like I've grown so much through this process. Here's the like cheese ball after school special sort of takeaway.
Donna, embrace your cheese ballness. As much as you try not to convince us you don't have it, you do, and we love you for it.
Well, here it comes. Brace yourself. That I feel like I'm much more prepared to handle what is next. I mean, I know I'm never going back, at least. So nothing to do but just deal with it, right?
Okay. So I know it's really hard to quantify these things, but I kind of love that Oliver gave it a percentage. So just for fun, what would your percentage be? Oliver is preening over there.
I mean, the thing that's interesting is I would actually, that's the percentage I would also give.
75? Really?
About 75%. Huh.
Really?
Yeah, that's how I would feel.
That is surprising to me. Okay.
I don't feel like I'm much closer than that.
Wow. And you're the longest one out of all of us. So this is interesting. Okay.
Maybe Oliver's just a little more optimistic in his assessment, and I'm a little more...
Well, you are a dark, tortured soul. So
Yes.
No one is as dark or tortured as I am.
I was going to say, Kristen's going to say like 15, so...
Oh, you'll be surprised.
Okay, good. All right, Kristen.
So to answer the question of whether or not I feel like I've moved on, I actually think largely yes. Realistically, I think I echo a lot of Donna's sentiments that the majority of it is behind me at this point. You know, because I feel like when I was very fresh and first taking my first little baby steps away, I would find myself just being so angry about so much. Because that was the time when the Ordain Women movement was getting going, when there was a lot more emphasis being placed upon LGBT issues in the church, and things that I was finding that I was just deeply upset about. And so just little things that a church leader would say or do, it would just trip me, and I would fly off into these places of sheer rage at the things that they were doing and saying and the things they were trying to teach my children and teach me and, you know, telling me how to live my life and on and on, right?
Which also makes sense, Kristen, because your family was still in the church.
Yes. Oliver and the girls. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have found as I have, you know, worked through all of this, kind of as we talked about previously, that rage reaction has drastically diminished in me. And Dawn, I think you're right, in large part because in my immediate family now, none of us are practicing Mormons anymore, right? This doesn't have the same weight and impact that it did even 2 years ago or 4 years ago. So that has kind of freed me up to feel like I don't have to care as much. I don't have to care what they're saying because it's not directly impacting me or the people that I love the most. But that's not to say, though, that I don't have those moments. I still have those moments sometimes. And it just doesn't have the same weight that it used to because it doesn't have the same impact on my life as it once did. You know, at this point, I don't feel driven anymore to be researching and studying and trying to understand more and more about church history and doctrine and those things like that. That consumes virtually no part of my mind anymore. It really doesn't. That was something that I needed when I was trying to work through this process of moving on. And I find myself no longer engaging in that. That to me tells me that I have definitely made large progress, you know, down that path away. The fact that I don't really sit and think about the church in my everyday life tells me that I have gone a great distance along that path. And so for me, if we were going to go for the percentages at this point, I mean,
yes, it's please.
It's interesting, like Donna, that you say 75%, because I'm sitting here feeling like I know that there will be things that come up. Like I know. But honestly, I would say I'm probably a solid like 95%. I really feel like there is so little impact now on me and on the way that I live my life that those little things that come up here and there, they'll cause flashes of, you know, momentary anger or irritation or whatever, but that's gone quickly. It doesn't linger like it would have once upon a time.
Michaela, I'm dying to know the answer for you.
Oh, I was wondering if anyone was going to ask. Actually, I've been thinking about it and going back and forth. The pendulum has swung many times, but I think I've landed on 88%. I don't know why.
That is so specific. That is so specific.
I don't know if it's like a Back to the Future throwback or wait, was it 88 miles per hour? I just feel like he always says 88 miles per hour.
Oh my gosh.
Is it?
Doc Brown souped up to learn from Back to the Future must exactly reach exactly 88 miles per hour to travel through time.
Okay, so I got
Michaela, you've landed on the formula for time travel to where you've moved on.
Or I proved my nerdiness in quoting a movie. So yeah, I don't know why 88 just feels like the right number. It's not quite 90. It's not an A, you know?
Solid B plus and you're good with that.
I'm a solid B plus.
And I'm just wrecking the curve like I always did.
Seriously.
Oh.
Sorry. Well, I think, so this is bringing up some questions for me of, does moving on mean, does it mean that you reach a point where nothing about Mormonism or church, past, present, or future, bothers you? Is that what it means? Is there 100% to reach? What does it mean?
Yeah. Oh. I actually think I would answer that with a parallel. When you think about anything in your life that has been traumatic or big, very few things do you ever get to the point where you don't feel a little something. I know for me, as I think about other difficult periods in my life, my ability to respond and to handle the reactions that I will just automatically have gets better, gets stronger over time. And I think they diminish. I think it's a bit of both. I think it would be disingenuous to say it goes away because being made fun of as a teenager for not being a jock, right? That never fully goes away, but it means a whole lot less to me now than it ever has. In my opinion, again, being the least far along in the group, I sort of envision it's going to be like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I say that, you know, I'm maybe 95% of the way along, because I don't think it's ever going to be 100. I really don't. I agree with you there, Donna, that I think it's probably impossible when something has been so utterly impactful to virtually every part of your life to be able to ever say that you are 100% of the way over it or past it or have moved on. But I feel like when I kind of look ahead and I think about when I imagine sort of the potential scenarios that could come up that might still have an effect on me, I have a hard time envisioning something that could be a big enough deal to me to cause me like a major conflict or pain or something. I feel like they're going to be fairly minor things that are going to pass quickly and fade into relative unimportance. So I guess that's why I derive that kind of 95%, just to say that I'm really pretty far gone. And acknowledge that there could still be some things coming up, but I just don't expect them to be very big.
Yeah.
So one of the pitfalls of being married to a physicist is that I can't help but think of this in scientific terms. And I was thinking about the speed of light, that you can approach the speed of light, but you can never actually reach the speed of light. And that this is exactly what that's like if we're going to bring another metaphor into it. Sorry.
Wait, so far we're going step by step down a mountain at close to the speed of light,
but not quite.
Or approaching
yes.
it with different ghosts following us.
That's for didn't the we have something else? We had something else too. And I can't
climbing
remember.
Over boulders.
Boulders. Thanks everyone for sharing that. I love sharing your thoughts and I loved hearing everyone's percentage. Maybe we could start a Facebook poll. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Oliver's very excited.
Someone take a note. Okay. When we first started planning this episode, our original topic was going to be about resigning and whether or not to resign. But as we talked more about it and as I started thinking about it more, it felt like that was just a little bit too limiting to explain everyone's experience, that not everyone is going to choose or feel the need to resign as a part of their moving on process. Some may choose to do it, some may not. But as kind of one of our final questions here, I want to ask each one of you what your thoughts are about resigning. So, Kristen, why don't you go start us off?
Sure. At this point in time, I have no plans to resign. The moment I felt like I was done, the moment I knew that I was done with Mormonism, I was done. And for me personally, and I know that this is different for everybody, and everybody's going to have their own perspective on whether or not or why one should or should not resign. But for me, going through the church's process for resigning feels like I am acknowledging that they still have authority over me. And I reject that notion completely. I was done the moment that I said I was done. That is why resigning right now is not something that matters. I don't mind the fact that my name is still on the records of the church, because there are 10 million other people whose names are still on the records of the church who don't practice. I'm one of many in that regard. And I am the kind of person who has a tendency to not want to do the things that people tell me to do. And I don't like it when people are trying to boss me around. But the reality is that to me, it feels like acknowledging an authority that I no longer believe in, which is why resigning has not been a priority. That being said, I'm not opposed to it necessarily. And if my entire family wanted to resign, I would. But as of right now, that's just not really in the cards.
Okay. Oliver.
So I have not considered resigning. In fact, I still have my email address inside the LDS Tools Church Tools app. I've hidden my address and taken out my phone number, but I kept my email address in. And it's funny, like as I was thinking about it, I might be at the point where I'm ready to take that out too, because I'm sick of getting the emails every Sunday of here's the link to the words, whatever lesson. When I think about resigning though, when I think about sort of the cost benefit analysis on this one, it really calculates out to not resigning. I, for myself, don't see a big benefit for doing it. Like, I have decided I'm still culturally Mormon. I still consider myself as someone who comes from Mormonism, has a connection to Mormonism, but I'm not a practicing Mormon. And I see a huge cost to my parents. You know, my mom and dad are very Orthodox, very traditional members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I think for them, seeing my name disappear from their church, you know, from their records, where they list like all the children that they're sealed to, I don't see enough of a benefit to me for resigning to potentially put that on my parents. So yeah, over time, I think I'm going to want to be associated with the church less and less, and I'll probably take out my email address out of the app, so there's really no way for them to contact us. But I just don't see a value in resigning for me.
What you said about your parents really resonates with me, but in the opposite way.
Say more about that.
That I feel like they don't get to have that. That this is mine. My membership is mine, and I get to own it, and I get to have the authority over that. And if they have a problem with that, and I don't mean to sound harsh, but I would like them to develop enough emotional skills and boundaries to deal with it themselves, and that I get to make my decision for me without reference to them.
Mm.
I think what's really interesting about this conversation so far, and I know we still have Donna to come, but this process of deciding whether or not to resign, we are all going to have very different rationales
for
the pros and cons of the situation.
And it's totally fine.
Yeah, and it's totally fine. And probably people will feel, there might be folks who just simply don't care, or other folks who feel very, very strongly and very passionately about the decision that they have made. And that's all valid. It's all legitimate. All of this is legitimate.
It's hard to talk about how different our experiences are and then say there's one right or wrong answer when it comes to resigning.
Because there's not.
Right? Like, they're just so wildly different. You know, it's interesting to hear your response to that, Michaela. And I don't know if this comes from me being a man or inside Mormonism. I'm accustomed to having authority.
Yes.
Right? Whenever I was in a place. So
yes.
This is nowhere different. But I know you didn't have the same level as authority in Mormonism as I did. So I'm curious if you think that might play into it.
Yes, for sure. I think that's one of my big motivators in all of my leaving the church decisions, that I, damn it, get to be the one to make these choices for myself. Nobody else gets to tell me that. And nobody else gets to claim me on their stinking records unless I say it's okay. And so for me, that is why I would want to resign. I'm not there yet, only because, again, family and kind of the same concerns that you have. But I will get there and it will happen. It's just a question of when.
And I think what's really interesting, too, about that question of authority is that, you know, like I just had said that for me, that's a big piece of this, too. Having my own authority over my own decisions. But again, it's kind of in a different way than Michaela, than you.
Yes, but you don't have, but you're saying it, I don't want to give them my power. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Like, but it's the same thing. Like, you don't want to give away your authority to make these decisions. I don't want to give away my authority.
Yes.
I don't want to recognize that they have any authority or validity, or that they have any authority and that their perception of me and my choices is valid.
Right.
Right. So that's why in my case, I don't really care if my name is on their stupid records. Because what I say, and when I say that I am not a member of the church, that's all that matters, because that's my own authority. But I absolutely 100% can see how for you, you know, having authority over this decision means that you take that back and you make that decision to say, I am no longer at all associated with you. Totally see that.
Exactly. And I feel the same way about you. Like, I can absolutely understand where you're coming from. I don't feel the same, but that's okay.
Yep. But it's interesting that it comes down to each of us having, interpreting what it means to have our own authority over the situation.
Right.
In different ways.
Yeah.
It's funny because there's one other element of this that Kristen and I can uniquely speak to, because we're the two parents of our two children here on this episode, right? We actually have talked about resigning our children.
Before they turn 18. Because we brought them into this. And it only seems fair that if they are in agreement, that we help get them out of it before they are adults and have to deal with it all on their own.
And I think what's really most interesting about it is for me, resigning the girls is actually as much about protecting them as it is about, you know, we got them in, we got to get them out. I also feel that way. And for me, there's this element of, I have taken my children out of Mormonism to protect them from certain things that I don't like about Mormonism, and to see it all the way through, I need to make sure that they're protected from it and that their names are no longer on the records of the church.
I get that.
Yeah. It definitely gets interesting when there are children involved.
Yeah.
And even more complicated for people who have children who want to stay in the church.
Right.
Oh my
gosh.
And they want
to
leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adds another layer to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Donna, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, so I love that Oliver brought in a cost-benefit analysis to it.
Of course he did. I do too.
I think of it as a matter, for me, of inertia. So, science nerd. And for a long time, it wasn't that I wasn't interested in resigning, but for a long time, I didn't have any push to go through with the resigning process.
There was no motivating factor here.
There was. And well, a lot of it was, there was so much work involved in just physically leaving the church and emotionally and mentally leaving the church, that one more thing to legally leave the church was like too much, right? Just, I couldn't just do the task. It was like, what do I have to do?
I've physically left. I've emotionally left. Don't make me administratively leave.
Yeah.
Like, it's just one too many. It's one too many things.
Exactly. But also, because I think early on in my process, I did have to, you know, that question of what do you believe? I came to such a firm landing place there fairly early on that I did feel fairly strongly that, like Michaela was saying, I don't want to be administratively or legally or whatever associated with the church and be on their records, because that is not who I am anymore. But it was just like, I could not just add one more thing to my to-do list to ever get around to it. I also totally do relate to what Oliver's saying about your parents. For a long time, that was the thing that just sort of tipped me over to the edge of not resigning. It'll just keep the peace. But as I went through the process of telling my parents, as that relationship has survived that and is doing well, and I'm seeing how they're responding to me being out of the church, I feel like as time passes, that could be something we handle. And probably in the last 6 months or so, I think I saw somebody post on Facebook that they had resigned and they'd gotten their letter back from the church and they posted it publicly and what a relief it was. And I remember seeing that and thinking, yeah, I think it's time. I need that. Maybe it's the closure. Maybe it's just the finally getting around to it. I don't know what it's the bow on the package. I don't know. But I feel like I'm there. But I also still didn't do anything about it. And this podcast, I think, is the thing that has finally got me going and looking up what it actually is going to take. And I actually have decided that it is time for me to resign. I haven't quite printed out my letter, but I do have the date that I plan to send it in, which is the anniversary of the date that I finally sent my email to our ward leaders saying that we weren't ever going back. An anniversary that I found in preparation for this episode in my journals and notebooks. I found the date that I wrote about that and decided that's the date. It actually also, serendipitously, is coming up between now and the end of the year. And I'm preparing for that. I've talked to my kids. One of my kids, surprisingly, decided they didn't want to be taken off the records because they kind of think it might be fun and interesting when they turn 18 to see what sort of contact they get from the church. I don't know. I don't know why.
Oh my gosh.
That's amazing.
But that's their decision.
Wow.
I guess they imagine it's going to be fun to talk to the missionaries and debate them. I don't know. The optimism of youth, yes. Right?
The folly of youth.
The folly of youth.
Fantastic.
So anyways, so yes, I decided I'm going to go through the process. And even, it was also surprising that even deciding to do that was one thing. And then going and doing, looking up with what it was going to take and reading more about it brought up some other feelings, a little bit of sadness and nervousness and, you know, a little bit of anxiety there about what that really was truly going to mean. And how is this like the final severing of that tie to my tribe? Or can I still, will that feeling that I have of like, I will always be Mormon, I am Mormon, it's in my blood, will that, it's kind of testing that, in other words. So anyways, that's where I'm at.
Congrats, Donna. That's exciting.
Yeah. And I do have a little bit of informational, just in the spirit of being a how-to guide, I have a little bit of information about the resignation process.
This is stuff that you came across in your research? Yes.
Yeah. So if anybody listening doesn't want to hear it, you can probably just skip about 4 to 5 minutes ahead. We'll probably be done with it. It's not going to take very long. Maybe 2 to 3 minutes. Oliver's like, what? So what I'll just say for people who are curious about the process, basically what it comes down to is it is just a letter that you have to write to the church records department. And it just has to have a few key items. And you either have to mail it, you can email it, or a third option is to, for some reason, hand deliver it to your bishop. Those are your three options. Fun fact, before, I think, 1985, it was not possible to get your name removed without being excommunicated. That was the only way. There was actually a lawsuit, and then the church lost the lawsuit and was legally required to give members a voluntary way
wow.
to have their names removed.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So there's a couple of resources. There's MormonNoMore.com has a whole instructional section. It has a template for the letter. It has all these FAQs. It's a really great resource. You can just copy and paste a letter, fill in your information, send it in. And another resource that a lot of people are aware of is QuitMormon.org, which used to be the easy, because it was a matter of just filling out a few questions. And then basically it's a lawyer in Utah who's kind of doing this pro bono for people. It got so popular though, now the church is requiring a notary to be involved in that process. So slightly less convenient at this point, but it's also supposed to be very fast, depending on how backlogged they are, and maybe doesn't involve getting contacted by like your local leadership. Which leads me to my next quick point is that if you're wondering,
I was going to say to insert in there too, that anecdotally, what I have heard recently is that people who are sending their own letters in are getting a quicker response than they are with Quit Mormon now, not just because of a backlog on Quit Mormon, but because the church legal department is not processing those resignations through Quit Mormon as quickly.
Like on purpose?
There's a lot of speculation. Yeah. There's speculation on why, but that does seem to be happening. So some people get them done quickly, some people don't.
Yeah. A difference there is basically what he's doing is he's sort of acting on your behalf. Mm-hmm. You become his client, even though you're not paying him. And he contacts, instead of the records department, the church law firm. Yeah. And so it's handled slightly differently. So so if people are wondering, okay, well, what happens if I send in the letter to the records department? Because you hear about, then you might get a letter from your bishop and maybe they'll say that you have to talk to them. So the church does send your request back to your local leadership. The only people who administratively have to know are your bishop and your ward clerk. They will know, and you likely will get a letter. You do not have to meet with them. You're under no obligation to do any of that. But you probably will just get a letter stating that they're starting the process and you have 30 days to think it over. That's probably what will happen. So they're not required to tell anyone else, but it is very likely that, like, if you have family in your ward or in your stake, you can just expect that they will find out just through the grapevine or gossip or whatever. But a couple of things that are to keep in mind, your name is not necessarily officially actually removed from the church list. It is removed from their membership roles. And that means that you won't appear on like LDS tools, and you won't appear like if your parents, that Oliver was mentioning, get that record sheet.
If you get your membership record at tithing settlement and you have the children sealed to you.
Yeah, you will not be on there anymore. So it is possible people around you will get clued into this. If you really don't want people to know who are close to you, that's something to consider. And I think that another great resource is Ex-Mormon Reddit. And I'm going to link to the post on there. There's a FAQ section that somebody goes through. And there's a lot of things that I was actually surprised to take into consideration. And especially, I think, for people who live in Utah and high population areas of Mormons, there were some interesting things to consider in those situations. So that's the very informational part of that.
So stop.
I learned a lot there.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, it's interesting as you were talking about, as you have started to research and notice some of the feelings that are coming up, it made me think that maybe I was being a little too hasty about and getting.
Well, that's just one of those things. It is surprising. You can feel like, yes, like feel so.
Yes, like I'm all up in firm, all up in my authority right now. And kind of on that high and feeling like they can just deal with it. But now that I'm kind of, you know, thinking about it a little bit more rationally, like it's going to be hard. Like I do love my parents and I don't want to hurt them. I would hope that they can deal with that, but it is a tricky one.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the end of every wordless episode, as we all know, we ask our panelists to share one thing they hope our listeners would take away from their story. So, Kristen, are you ready to share yours?
I think what keeps coming to my mind, this process is, it's unpredictable. You don't necessarily know what is coming. And just be patient with yourself. Understand that most likely there will be a lot of emotional ups and downs as you work through this process. And to not be afraid of it.
Okay, thank you, Kristen. Oliver.
The one thing that I hope people will take away is really just the idea that there is something beyond. There is something beyond moving on from Mormonism. I can't tell you if there's something beyond this life. You know, and I'm continuing to learn and work to be comfortable with that unknowing. But I can tell you, and I've seen from people around me, that there is something beyond Mormonism for all of us. And the unknown of what the process of moving on is going to be for you, it's okay that it's unknown and it's hard. And there's joy to be had, and there's fears, and there's tears, and there will be, you know, moments of pain and moments of anger and moments of peace and moments of acceptance and happiness. but there is something beyond.
I love that. Thank you. Okay, Donna, close us out.
I also love that and really appreciate those thoughts, Oliver. That same Quaker pastor that I talked about at the beginning, James Mulholland, in that same talk, he says, when you leave religion, nobody throws you a going away party. And I think we also talked about that in our very first episode. And I've always thought of this endeavor as us throwing a going away party for people, not telling people that they have to do it a particular way, but cheering them on, sending them off with, you know, a hug and a high five and letting them know it's going to be okay. And so I love that. That's not quite my takeaway, though. My takeaway is, so on that date when I finally stepped off the mountain and sent that email and officially was done attending church, and I also mentioned I found where I wrote about it in my journal, and I wrote down two quotes that day, and one of them was, the growth of a seed begins with the seed's destruction. Which was not surprising at all to me, because that's another metaphor that I've loved. And that was very important to me at the time, that this is a growth process, and that from the outside, you know, from the seed's perspective, it is catastrophic, but it's necessary, right? But the other one, the other quote that I wrote was really surprising to me to see it. And it's a quote by Salvador Dali that says, have no fear of perfection. You'll never reach it. And it was just very surprising to me that that's what I wrote on that day. And I think I was telling myself, let go of that fear that you're going to have to do this the perfect way and just do it. Just take that next step. And that's all you have to do. And so I don't know who needs to hear that, but I thought that's what could be my one takeaway for whoever's out there who needs to also hear that.
I love that. Who was it that said, just take the next best step?
Frozen 2.
Do the next right thing.
Do the next right thing. Yes. Okay, I really loved all of your takeaways. And honestly, it does feel a little bit like the end of a testimony meeting.
Kind of does.
Are we all triggered?
I am a little triggered by saying that. However, the feelings are similar in that I am having some very tender feelings right now about all of you and about the podcast and about all of our listeners. So thank you for that.
Some big feels.
Big feels. Yeah. So that was it. This is it for our final formal episode of the Wardless Podcast. Thanks again, all of you, for a really beautiful discussion. I really appreciated what everyone had to say. We would love to hear you, our listeners' experiences about resigning or moving on from Mormonism. Do you agree or disagree with anything we've said? Do you have anything useful to share? Do you want to share the percentage that you're at in terms of your leaving?
We will make that a Facebook poll, Michaela. Never you fear.
Good. You can also, of course, find us on all the socials by searching Wardless Podcast. And of course, please be sure to give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, as it will help others find us. And as always, we're so, so grateful for the sponsors who make this podcast possible. This week, we would like to thank REI, the go-to source for all your mountain trekking needs.
You've been listening to Wardless, a post-Mormon field guide. For more information and for the show notes for this episode, visit wardlesspodcast.com. If you have a question you'd like us to answer on the podcast, a topic you'd like us to consider, or if you think you might have a unique perspective to add to an upcoming episode, we'd love to hear from you. And if you found this episode helpful, please consider leaving us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. But the most helpful thing you can do is share this episode with someone you know. So please share the love and pass on our links. Thanks again for listening. We hope it makes you feel a little less wordless.
So it does feel a little bit like we're wrapping up a testimony meeting.
I think you should say that.
I was trying to. That's what I was trying to.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know. You know, you didn't say dead air, so I didn't know that you were starting.
Here we are recording our last core episode, and we still
can't do this.
To repeat, we are never going to get this.
It's been 2.5 years. We still suck.
That, yeah. That has proven true.
Yep, for sure. And we're what, 3+ hours in? Okay.
Dead air.